what can we learn in Alaska from our neighbors across the Bering Sea, and what can they learn from us? Remember, the friendship flight happened before the Berlin Wall came down. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Our guests today are journalists from Russia. You want to get to know them? Know this. Our number toll-free, 1-800-478-8255. That's 478-TALK, toll-free. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email live at talk@APRN.org. The Russians are here on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 25 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8400.
Well, our guests are from Moscow and are here visiting Vic Fisher. Vic, are you still doing the Russian-American thing over at the university?
Oh, we're hardly doing anything with Russia right now. We still have big dreams, but of late, emphasis has been on other countries and mostly on Alaska issues.
Indeed. So Victor is with us to help with any cultural barriers we might encounter with our two guests, who are much younger than either Vic or I. In fact, when the Berlin Wall came down, they were teenagers, maybe not even quite teenagers.
No, we were.
teenagers. So I'd like to welcome to our microphones Katya Nekrasova.
Yes.
Hello, Katya.
Hello.
And you, as I understand, you work for Radio Mayak. You actually do what we do here, which is
Yes, just the same. Just the same, but usually I'm used to see it on your place.
Yes, I'm sure it is different. So do you get to do interviews that are broadcast live?
Yes, usually.
And you went through a phase there, I understand, where you were doing like celebrities and stars and all like that?
Yes, stars, but not from showbiz, you know. Uh-huh. I'm usually talk to politicians and some kind of that.
Political stars.
Yes, political stars.
So, for instance, Vladimir Putin, do you know him? Would he recognize you? You walk up to him?
Well, I know him. I doubt that he knows me, but I have been in his corps, and so it's for 5 years, for the last 5 years, and now I'm in his White House corps. So I think he knows me, how I look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but on big press conference, sure, every journalist can ask his question and me too.
Right. So you are in the United States, visiting with Victor.
Yes.
And enjoying Alaska. This is a vacation, yes?
Yes, it's vacation. I've been dreaming about it for about 15 years because 15 years ago, Vic invited me the first time. Or even 20. I don't remember.
Closer to 20.
Yes. And it was my great dream. And now I'm so enthusiastic about all this. It's great. Alaska is a wonderful land, really.
And you've also brought your husband, who is another journalist, with you.
Yes.
Perhaps you introduce him for us.
This is Nikolai Saprin. His short name is Kolya. This name is very difficult to Americans, I know. Kolya, I think it's quite easy, but okay. He is Nick. And he is a sport journalist on the Radio Mayak. We work together. And also, he is a TV commentator on Eurosport. It is European television, but now it has a Russian version.
Well, I'm sure Alaskans can handle Katya and Kolya. I'm absolutely confident that they will get this down. And they're available for your telephone conversation for whatever you'd like to bring up at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, toll-free in Anchorage. A local call at 550-8422. An email is talk@APRN.org. Well, it's really fun to be speaking to younger journalists All the Russian journalists that I have known up until now have been around my age.
Which and, is very old.
Well, or older. And you know, things have changed so much since I was there in 1989. Everything has changed.
Yes.
I think the role of the press now is, would you not say, very significant there?
Well, I think it is much more significant than almost 20 years ago when you were in Russia. Yes, really, everything has changed, and you would not recognize this country. And me, I'm 29, and I remember the 80s and the beginning of 90s. That was really very, very hard period for everybody in Russia. And now, speaking about the press, I think in 90s, after the putsch, you know, putsch is our revolution in 1991, press became, press got freedom that it had dreamed about. And then the freedom became, it was a big river, now it was a creek. But it's okay, because we have five national TV channels, and we have some private channels. And on private channels, you can hear critics on Putin or on Medvedev or everybody else. And five national chairs are not so... I don't know how to say it. It stands for president and for government, and I think it's normal for modern Russia.
So. Yes. Would you say that, I mean, essentially when I was there, people simply didn't believe anything that was reported. It was assumed to be lies.
But they didn't believe, but they watched it.
Yes, they did.
Every day.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and you couldn't hide when it was live on television. You couldn't, yes. You know, nothing could be hit. And also it varied on what the publication was. Like I remember the Youth Pravda was actually pretty good.
Yes.
So, as opposed to
I don't think so, you know.
In this case, it was. This was in the Far East, you know, and they were...
It was pretty good, none about political items.
Yeah.
It was really a good journalism.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, as long as it wasn't too political.
Yes.
But then, when things are like that, what happens, I think, is everything becomes political. Even sports becomes political.
Well, do you agree, Kola, that sport is very political thing?
Sports became political?
Yes.
I'm not sure, because sports is a part of the life. Maybe political too, but it's not political. But so big money in our sports. And you believe or you don't believe, yes, it'sближает.
Make closer.
Yeah, make closer, political and sports, by other reasons.
Yes, but last year during the, in Guatemala, they chose Sochi like an Olympic town, and it was quite political.
Yes, yes. Yes.
So, Kolya, are you going to go to the Olympics?
Yes, to be the Beijing. It's beginning 8th of August. Yes, it will be great Olympics, I think. I was in the Sydney, Salt Lake City, Athens, Torino, and it's fifth Olympic Games for me.
Really?
Yes.
So you're really quite experienced, and you probably then will know many of the people in the press corps that cover the Olympics and all that.
Maybe, but I know so many people who was 10, who had 10, maybe 15 Olympic Games. Mm. They're great guys, yes.
Much more experienced.
Yes, much more experienced.
So what will the, have you figured out what the time difference is going to be between Beijing and Moscow? Nope, not yet.
I think it's about 8 hours time difference.
Oh, yes.
Eight, no, I think...
Seven?
Five. 5 or 4, yes, difference.
So we return to Moscow on the 1st of August, and on the 3rd, Kolya will have to go there, so it will be quite difficult.
But it's not the main problem, I think.
No?
Yes, main problem to work in the Beijing at the first time. At the first time, I don't know what is it, what the city is it.
What does it like, yes. Look like, yes.
Yes.
It's a very good city.
Well, I guess you will get used to it pretty fast, but you have to, I guess it's kind of better being there because you will, you'll be earlier, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yes. So you can file, you have some time to get your stories together.
I hope.
It's much better than the other way around. Okay. Well, good. And you, Katya, you're going to the convention?
Yes, fortunately I had multi-visa, so my chef said, so you can be, you can live in the USA and cover everything that is going on there. Okay, I said yes. So, but now I'm going to Moscow and then to come back for the conventions, first the Democratic and then Republican, and then maybe if I will do my work good, then I will return for the elections. You know, these elections, president elections, are really very interesting for Russia. And we watch it in very big details. And it's, well, I understand that it's very important for America now, but we watch it very good.
Actually, if people are already very interested in this, it makes it a little easier to report on because you don't have to explain so much background, which people already know.
Yes, yes. Russian people know about your candidates, and it was very interesting to watch the competition between Obama and Clinton because Russian women are fond of Clinton, and so...
Really?
Yes, sure. She's a very beautiful woman.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So, and now... But I think now the competition becomes more interesting, and so I will cover it.
How long a story will you be able to do? I mean, you go to the convention and you work in the press room and you work your story up.
I don't know. I think I will work just by phone because I don't need a computer, you know, and big studio, just by phone.
Really?
Yes, like I was. Like I did during Orange Revolution in Ukraine. Uh-huh. It was just the same.
Ah, two ways.
Yes.
We call that two ways business. So you just... You'll have a set of notes.
Yes.
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 And you can just work from that. Fascinating. And I'm glad you brought up the Orange Revolution because this is what I'm sure there are many listeners who never heard of the Orange Revolution.
Really?
I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
But essentially it was an election dispute in the Ukraine.
Yes.
And it was a case where the people genuinely became politically active despite very adverse circumstances.
Yes.
You actually went to Kiev. You were able to be there for much of this when they were disputing the election and so forth.
Yeah. You know, it was very interesting elections because it was unpredictable. Yes. Because in Russia, you know who will be the winner, yes? And there it was absolutely... nobody knew what it would be. And it was a change of regime.
We had the old regime was Kuchma.
Kuchma, yes.
And there was his sort of anointed successor was Yanukovych.
Yes, yes.
And then you had Yushchenko.
Yes, Yanukovych was supported by Moscow and Yushchenko was supported by the West. And it was a real fight. And the main thing that I was impressed very much is that all the Ukrainians were so involved in this political process. And nobody could imagine that. Because, you know, maybe our listeners know that all the Ukrainians went out to the streets. And not only in their towns, they came to the capital, to Kyiv. And they started to, well, they said that we want Yushchenko. And, well, it was November, it was rather cold, it was about minus 10 Celsius. And, well, it was one day, I thought, okay, it's just for one day. But the next day I came to the Maidan, it's the main square in the center of Ukraine, of the Kyiv, and I saw them again. And it was so surprising. And then 1 week passed, and people were in the square. It was amazing.
They essentially made it so that the government could not function. There were so many people there that the government feared to function. And the election essentially was in dispute. And the people knew what they wanted.
Yes.
But it took quite some time in order to bring the machinery of state around. As I recall, it was actually ended up being a court decision that did it. And it was very questionable as to how corrupt the court was and whether the court would, what part of the law the court would adhere to.
Well, let me throw in a more direct question. Was there a dispute over whether the election had been honestly run and whether the sort of the people's choice was pushed aside in favor of the Moscow-leaning candidate?
Actually, I must say that there was two tours. Yes, два тура выборов.
There were two stages of the election.
Yes, stages of the election. And in the second stage, Yanukovych won. And this that was a thing that Yushchenko оспаривал.
Contested.
Yes, yes. And then they went to the court and started to demand to recount this elections. So if people, Ukrainian people, didn't do it, it would be Yanukovych. I'm not sure that Yanukovych is so bad for Ukraine, but it's just another way. And, you know, but it's very complicated because Yushchenko became a president with Tymoshenko, Yulia Tymoshenko. This is a woman who helped him a lot. But now she fights Yushchenko because she wants to be a president herself. And it's complicated because that day they were one team. Now they quarrel like tigers, you know, and they, well, it's just politics.
It's just politics.
As usual.
What was interesting, I think, was, as you say, the way that people were so daring and resolute and insistent upon if this election was not properly conducted, that something be done about it. And it wasn't properly conducted. It was pretty clear that there was bribery involved.
I'm afraid I don't understand you very much.
Well, it's nastier than what you're saying. Yushchenko was poisoned.
Yes, maybe. I'm not sure.
Something went wrong.
Yes.
He looked very bad.
Well, he looked very bad, and honestly, I thought he was going to die because he looked awful. But nowadays, nobody knows, was it a poison or was it advertising of himself? Nobody knows. Maybe.
Well, wow. Yes. So the intrigue goes on.
Yes, and there was a committee that investigated this case. And this committee now is still working.
Ah.
So there are no facts that...
So you were, this was in your really early days when you covered the Orange Revolution.
Yes, it was 4 years ago.
And you, what did it do to you? to be there for all this and watch this happen. As you're saying, some of this was were things that was not possible to imagine.
Yes, but I think for me it was just one of the best days in my life because I saw so enthusiastic people. When we had Putsch in 1991, I was a rather small girl, so I remember everything, but I couldn't understand what was going on. And that day is in Ukraine, I understood how much people desire means. And that was great. And for me, as a journalist, it meant, to be objective, because I wanted very much to put on an orange coat and orange
armband.
Yes, and to cry Yushchenko, but I was a journalist and I tried to cover Yushchenko and Yanukovych interests, and so yeah. It was a great school for me.
And it must have been difficult also because the people were so much behind Yushchenko.
Yes.
So it's hard to be fair to the other side.
And besides, a few people who were for Yanukovych, they were very good paid for that. And so I couldn't tell that, here are some people for Yanukovych, they are honest, and it was impossible. So it was rather hard.
Could I throw in something here?
Vic Fisher.
I just want you to know that Katya did such a good job reporting on the Ukrainian Orange Revolution that she received the award as the best reporter in all of Russia for the job that she did there. So
radio reporter, yes.
Radio reporting, mm-hmm. Yes.
The gold microphone.
Yes.
And it is not your only gold microphone?
What? It was?
You had another
Yes, I have another microphone. It was in 2006 in February when our market fell down. It was up, it was just an accident because too much snow was on the roof of this market and it fell down and many people were dead, and so I was working there. And but I don't like to tell about that because it was a tragedy, and it's not a case that, well, it's not very pleasant microphone, but
yes, I understand that. I won an award for reporting on a jet airplane that ran into a cloud of volcanic ash and fell 3 miles. It was full of people.
Yes.
But then the engine came back on, and they managed to bring it into the airport. And I was at the airport when it came in, so I just found out because all the other flights were stopped all of a sudden. And I was just asking questions, so I just happened to be there. But I don't much like to talk about that one either, but at least it had a better outcome than a whole market collapsing under snow load. Was it investigated afterwards?
My case?
The case of the when something collapses, maybe it wasn't built right.
Well, yes, there was an investigation, but it was not my job. My job was to come there to tell people what's going on and to, my investigation was the other. It was many people had lost their relatives in this market. And I met one guy who had lost his brother there. And we went to the morgue and to different morgues. We were looking for some information, and it was for 3 or 4 days. Nobody knew what was happening. So it was a little investigation, but not in its real sense, maybe.
Do you have fans? In other words, there are people who wait for you to come on the radio. They want to hear your reports.
I hope so.
I'm the greatest fan.
I hope so. But when I go out, in the evening, there are no crowd. It's a pity.
They're not waiting outside the studio?
No.
They just don't know what you look like.
Yes.
It's true, but Kolya, they know what you look like.
Я не знаю, как ты выглядишь.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, you are on television.
No. It's not...
He's not on the screen.
Yes. I'm not news reporter. I'm only comment. After the screen. Behind the screen.
Yes, behind the screen.
Oh, I see.
Only commenting the movies, the action that you can see on the screen.
Play by play.
Yes, play by play. Time by time.
Soccer, it seems. Soccer's a big specialty of yours, yes?
Yes. It's my favorite kind of sports. And after that, what Russian team did in the year 2008...
In June,
we were in the semi-final after the win in the quarter-final by Holland, in the game of Holland, against Holland. We have a boom, a soccer boom in Russia.
Our listeners don't even know about this victory, but in Moscow there was a great celebration, and possibly it was the biggest celebration after the World War II, you know? It was, although we didn't win all the championship, we won only one quarter.
We were in the streets and, you know...
they were
Christmas
crazy.
Or New Year, it was more great.
Yeah,
it was the greatest holiday.
Yes, I couldn't sleep.
Night, yes.
Was it a, so it was played in Russia, or where was it played?
No, in Switzerland, I suppose.
Uh-huh. It was in Basel, yes, Basel, Switzerland.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And what made this game so great?
I could explain because I know that American football or basketball or ice hockey is the greatest kind of sports in Alaska, in the U.S. But it's a very simple game, very simply. You have around the ball.
What game do you mean?
Soccer. You have a ball. It's not the rugby. It's not the American football. It's ball. Real ball around, and you have 22 guys who run on the field and could score the goal in the net. It's great, I think. I'm a very big fan of this game. And
what was the special about that game against Holland?
Game against Holland. Дух, как сказать, дух.
The spirit of victory.
Yes, spirit of victory, spirit of team. We didn't know that we have the team. We know that we have the guys. It's not a great guys. It's not a good team. But after that win, after that games against Sweden, against Greece, former European champions, we believed in that team.
You know, Russian people are looking for a national idea. For many, many years, since the Soviet Union was destroyed. And I don't know, do Americans have a national idea?
I don't know. I think they think that they do.
Yes.
But I'm a lot of it is in the conventions of the way that people live and what they assume to see. But as far as looking towards heroes, I'm not sure.
So we were not sure also, and it was a great problem for us. But after that game, maybe it sounds funny, but after that game, we understood that there is a national idea in not only in sports, but in victims. Victories, yes.
Uh-huh.
Because I was working in Moscow during that championship on Euro championship.
Yes, okay.
And people was fond of this victory. They wanted it. They was very close to each other, and almost like during Ukraine Revolution. You know,
this year is very successful for sport in Russia because we have gold medals in ice hockey championship, world championship
in Canada. Oh,
in
yes.
Canada, yes.
Now you're just bragging.
It's not an issue. Yes, we have. gold medals in handball. It's women handball. It's the greatest clubs tournament in Europe. Our team Zvezda has won this trophy, and now semifinal of the European Championships in soccer, and now it's Olympic Games. We know, we believe, we confident in our team, and we're looking to this Olympics with optimism.
Where are the Russians in the Tour de France, though?
Yeah, no. But we have one guy. His name is Denis Menshov. He's a bicycle, greatest bicycle. He won a Vuelta. It's a Tour of Spain. Yes, 2 years ago, I think, and maybe he can win.
All right. Thank you so much. Nikolai Saprin and Katya Nekrasova are our guests today on Talk of Alaska, and we'll be to your calls when Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
It's Talk of Alaska, and we have Russian journalists with us, radio journalists, too, so it's really pretty enjoyable for me. And also from the younger generation, talking about how media is done in Russia now. And if you are ready, I will start with the telephone calls. Let's go to Sean, who joins the program from Haines. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Sean.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, I have a question for either of your guests, and it's about the fairly dramatic change in the climate around Moscow and Russia in particular. After the period of glasnost, it seems that things have tightened up considerably with Putin. And do you think that's a change that's welcomed by some Russians or viewed with a little bit of concern? And do you expect it'll stay that way, or do you think it will open back up again after Putin?
Katya?
Okay, thank you, Vic. Please repeat this question. It was too fast.
Oh. Basically, the question is that under Putin, Russia was centralized and things were tightened up.
Yes.
And the question is, do you think this will continue or will it be loosened up again after a while?
Well, you know, now we have a new president, Dmitry Medvedev, and many people in Russia and in the West think that he will do all his politics more tightly, you know, and maybe not so strong, because Putin is really a strong guy, and everything he does, it was very, I don't know how to say. So Medvedev is not so rough. And maybe it will be a warming of our politics. But I'm not sure that Russia nowadays needs a warm politics, maybe. Maybe it still needs a strong politic for its interests in the world.
You said earlier that there was a point where the journalism was flowing like a large stream, and then it became smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think? Do you think it's going to become a larger stream again?
I think yes. I think yes, because Medvedev is, he looks like he wants to communicate with journalists more than Putin. So that's why I think it will be big river again. Well, maybe not so big as in 90s, but it was okay. It will be okay.
It was interesting to the United States, and I understand how in the United States the son of the former director of the CIA becoming president of the United States can be viewed as with suspicion. Mm-hmm. So also in Russia, you had the head of the KGB who becomes the head of state. Mm-hmm. When you say then the guy that succeeds him, how do we know he's just not Putin's still there pulling the strings?
Once again, please, how do we know?
How do we know that Putin is actually still not the real power?
Well, I think he is still a real power. But Medvedev, you know, we say that now we have two presidents, and that's true. But Medvedev is just a beginner, and in 1 or 2 years he will get a power of himself. But now they are colleagues, and that's a paradox, but that it is.
Well, the style of Putin was interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. On the issue of missile defense, for instance, and the missiles being placed in Europe, he was able to create a standoff with Bush, even though Bush was throwing the money mm-hmm. and so forth. Do you think that will continue?
Well, I think all these people are struggling for our interests. And, for example, the most questionable point is that United States are going to stand their rockets on in the Czech Republic and Poland, and they want Georgia and Ukraine in NATO. Yes?
Yes.
And I'm not Putin. Putin and Moscow and Kremlin doesn't understand, they do understand why USA does all these things, but they don't want it. So the struggle will continue, I think.
Yes. Well, Putin has shown himself to have great resources in doing this, and I'm wondering if that continues as he fades out of the picture, if we still have the ability to improvise foreign policy.
Vic?
Explain what you mean.
What do you mean, Steve?
Putin could make decisions very quickly.
Yes.
Do you believe his successor can?
I think yes.
Yes?
Yes, I think yes.
And he's learning.
Yes.
All right. Good answer. Katya Nikolasova, our guest here on Talk of Alaska, the telephone number 1-800-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. We've got one question was called in, and just they're allowing me to ask it. We're also open on the Internet at talk@aprn.org. And we'll go now to a call from Valdez, Alaska. Guy, you're on Talk of Alaska.
Well, I want to first welcome him to Alaska.
Thank you very much.
Since you're talking about that missile thing with the, putting up that radar in the Czech Republic and the missiles that are supposed to go to Poland, the EU, I can't understand why, if the United States is so concerned about, these Arab countries and them shooting missiles at Europe, why isn't Europe, going to spend the money for the radar and the missiles? But also I want to know, are you guys talking about global warming in Russia?
Global warming? Well, maybe yes. And talking about rockets in Europe, George Bush says that these rockets are necessary for the protection from Iran. Yes?
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around that, too.
Yes. And I think it's clear that it is not so. Yes?
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yes. So, and why does he still saying that? Because everybody understands that it's not so.
Europe should be the ones that are concerned about, if the Iranians or any other Arab bloc country is going to shoot missiles into Europe, I think the Europeans should be spending for their own defense, right? And they don't seem to be as concerned about this. I mean, we're the ones that are putting up the money. We're the ones that are going to build the missiles. We're the ones that are going to build the radar unit. I can't understand why all of this is going on. But I also want to know, is the war still going on in Chechnya?
There are two questions about Chechnya and about Europeans. Yes.
Yes.
What? Well, the one's not really a question. It's he's just saying his opinion. You don't really have a dispute. You pretty well see it the same way. But this about Chechnya, he wants to see what your attitude is.
Well, actually, I have never been in Chechnya, but and I can say about it as well as you because I just am reading the newspapers. But I think it is becoming better there. It's becoming law is coming up, and so many murderers, so much crime, but there are still many problems because we have Ramzan Kadyrov. It is the son of the former president of Chechnya, who can communicate with his soldiers there, and that's why he is the president. But I think that, well, I don't know. He is a rather questionable person. So we don't know, is he good or is he bad for people in Chechnya? But
have you done any interviews with that guy that did Night Watch and Day Watch, the director?
What? Excuse me?
The movies? Movies? You know, that we had two of your movies come to the United States, Night Watch and Day Watch.
I'm not acquainted with them, guy.
Well, they're kind of fantasy, futuristic movies.
We're drawing a blank on that one.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks for your call from Valdez there, guy. All right. Nikolai.
Yes.
The question which has come in is, in the West, in our country, Gorbachev is seen as a major hero, a great statesman. And his curiosity is of our caller is what? How does your generation perceive Mikhail Gorbachev?
Maybe you can explain it.
Как твое поколение воспринимает Горбачева? Потому что здесь он национальный такой герой. Who is Gorbachev for you?
Yes. Okay, I will speak in Russian because
it's too complicated.
Yes.
Okay.
Very
okay.
Good.
Окей. Я могу говорить только за себя, потому что, наверное, для кого-то из представителей моего поколения...
Hold it.
Окей.
Коля is saying, I can speak only for myself,
yes.
Because I can't represent the whole...
Yes. Наверное, для кого-то из представителей моего поколения Горбачев, кем-то из представителей моего поколения Горбачев воспринимается как-то иначе. Для меня он, в общем, олицетворение моей юности и моего детства.
Для Коли это олицетворение его юности и детства. Символ.
Символ, yes.
For Коля, Gorbachev, who was the one who changed Russia and opened Russia up, was a symbol of his youth. That was what was important.
Yes, that's right. Мне было 9 лет, когда Горбачев пришел к власти.
I was 9 years old when Gorbachev came to power.
Я вспоминаю, как Советский Союз, страна менялась из года в год под его руководством.
And I remember how Soviet Union changed year by year under his leadership.
И для меня это были очень светлые времена.
And for me these were very bright years.
Поэтому я вспоминаю их с большой любовью и теплотой.
So I look back on those with great love.
Yes, that's right.
But you know, I can
add thank you, Victor.
Many people in Russia are still dreaming of Soviet spirit, and they don't like Gorbachev. But I don't say that there are lots of people, such people, yes, but there are.
Yeah.
I might just explain that Gorbachev essentially presided over the destruction of the communist regime of the Soviet Union and laid the basis for the breakup of the Soviet Union into separate countries such as Russia and Ukraine and Georgia and Armenia and sort of all the... There were 15 republics and they all went their own way.
Yes. But he, under his vision, the communist system would be evolved into something that would continue to serve the social needs. And instead what happened was everything that served the social needs collapsed.
Yes.
And people were suddenly very poor.
Yes.
And things got very corrupt. Mm-hmm. And now...
And these are problems we have now.
Yes. And so obviously this would make some people want to go back to the old ways.
Sure.
So the
Speaking about these people, I mean, these people who are poor and who is poor and who is... who go to some, I don't know, to some officials, and this man says, give me money, I will give you what you want. So that's a very big problem.
Do you think that there is a sense now of opportunity? My perception was that there was a period where it really, for a person want to start a business, it was... You had to go pay bribes, acquire influence with the people that still had the real power.
Yes.
Do you think things are more open now where a person has opportunities?
You know, one of the most important things that Medvedev wants to do is to struggle against corruption. Now... Something is changing because many people really wants to become a businessman, want to become a businessman and to make maybe a small business, but to make it. And when they are starting, many bridges and walls are in front of them. So now Medvedev and White House and our Duma and our Congress are making new laws against. And 2 weeks ago, I covered these initiatives. Yes, and it's our great hope that there will be change. It will be change.
Let's go to Colin, joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Colin.
Thank you. I just had a quick question. I just wondered how the assassination of Anna Politkovskaya had affected them as journalists. And I'll take the response off the air or off the phone. Thank you.
Thank you. The question is how we became a journalist? Or no?
No, the Anna Politkovskaya was killed. Does this make you feel vulnerable, afraid?
Dick, please.
Была убита.
Политковская.
Да. И так, поэтому вы боитесь теперь? Какое впечатление, какие результаты от этого?
Анна Политковская was covering the events in Chechnya. We think that, we had another journalist that was killed in 1995, and this crime is not investigated now. And Anna Politkovskaya case, I think, is close to the end, the investigation. I think it was only because she covered so... dangerous theme as Chechnya. And I don't cover this theme, this item, that's why, no.
it's a very, very good answer, I think. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking with two journalists visiting Alaska from Radio Mayak, which means lighthouse, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Leading a nonprofit organization or tribal government is challenging. The Rasmussen Foundation Sabbatical Program provides nonprofit CEOs and tribal administrators with paid time off to reflect on their work, renew their personal energy, and avoid professional burnout. You can apply or nominate someone you know at rasmussen.org or call toll-free 877-366-2700 for an application. Application deadline is October 1st. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
One 800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. It's Talk of Alaska, and this week we're talking Russia and Russian journalism. It's a great fun for me to have Katya Nekrasova and Nikolai Saprin with us, both of Radio Mayak. What is Mayak? What you say that it was sort of a youth oriented radio station, and now it has split. So yes. That it has a news outlet and a music?
Yes. Mayak is the oldest radio station in Russia. In the 1st August, it will be 44 years old. And for all its life, it was a music station with 10 minutes of news every hour. And so it's very popular. But then, in the beginning of the century, it became the news station, absolutely news. And now it becomes a pop station, but many changes. But anyway, it's a big holding, and we have a new station now. It's a news station, so it's still popular.
But in spite of this. Mayak for several generations is the symbol of life, maybe, yeah. Radio life.
It goes all the way back to Khrushchev.
Yeah.
You know, pounding the shoe. This has been a lot of fun. We have a question from Fran, who joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Fran.
Hey, good morning.
Hello.
I have two questions.
Yes.
One is, I'm wondering if the couple's coming to Kodiak, since we've had all this rich Russian history here. And the second question I have is, as a journalist, do they report on education in Russia? And I'm just interested in hearing about that.
Vic, please.
Двойной вопрос. Да. Первый, вы будете в Кодиаке, это там же место русской истории.
Uh-huh.
Второй вопрос, вы у вас репортаж по... Образование, education, расскажите, что...
That's almost an invitation.
So, yes, it sounds like that, but, you know, our visit to Kayak depends on Vic Fischer only. The other thing about education, yes, you know, during the last 3 years, we have a big education program in Russia, and that was led by Dmitry Medvedev while he was not a president yet. And maybe you can't imagine this, but in the most part of Russian schools didn't have internet or computers at all. And now every school, well, at least our government says so, that every school has a computer and internet, and has many has a big grants, you know, a big sum of money they can get from the government to increase the studying for the money for their teachers, and so. It's going good. It's going well now.
Yeah, thanks for your call there, Fran.
And wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And it is an invitation. We just have to get that plane ticket.
Right. If the Rasmussen Foundation is listening, maybe they'll fund our trip to Kodiak.
Okay.
Katya, do you? We have a question on the internet from Doug, who wants to know if you've done any reporting on Dashniki.
Dachniki?
Si, da.
Well, no. Dachniki is not for making reports. They are just for a good life. No, that's great that you know this word, dachniki and dacha. Dacha is very popular not only in Russia, as I could notice, and also here you have dachas, but I think... I don't know what to ask.
Well, yes. So, yeah, Alaskans would have, they'd have the, what we call the cabin.
Yes.
When there's also a fish camp.
Yes.
And a dacha would be similar.
Yes.
And you get to spend an extended period of time. But I think what Doug was talking about is the idea that people try and live in their dachas, that they actually have sustainable agriculture and actually grow crops.
Well, by the way, the dream of our government now is to move people from towns to the villages, because our villages are dying now. No people, all the people are going to towns and want to be in Moscow. Moscow is overcrowded now. And so that's one of the programs to develop villages and to help people to live there in normal conditions. So I think, you know, as I could see here, Alaska, I think, is the best example of the harmony life a man with nature and nobody disturbs each other. And so that's very good. I think that's ideal for Russia.
You have mosquitoes, right?
Yes, I'm okay.
You know, I'm amazed. We've been talking for almost an hour, and the name Lenin has not come up.
I think it's normal for the present.
Well, we asked about Gorbachev and how he was viewed.
Yes. Yes.
How is Lenin viewed now?
Well, many people want him to be buried. No, I think this is the main thing. But our former President Putin said that he guarantees that in the next several years, Lenin will not be buried, because there are many people who pray for him, many old people. And so we must wait.
Great answer. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
How much more time do you have to enjoy Alaska?
About some more days.
Well, I hope that I see that Vic is being an excellent host for you, and I'm sure many Alaskans, speak on behalf of many Alaskans, say welcome.
Thank you very much.
Very glad you're enjoying our wonderful place.
Yeah, great.
Nikolai Saprin and Katya Nekrasova, both of Radio Mayak. It's Talk of Alaska, Gooseberry Peter at the controls, Emily Butler on the phones, Duncan Moon's our managing editor. I'm Steve Heimel. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP, proud to support public broadcasting in Alaska. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.